Hey, Rob Balls. In the paranormal news, we got another Nessie sighting in Loch Ness, a brand new species of snake discovered, which will have Harry Potter fans cheering, and a sudden increase in werewolf sightings in Mexico. In the cryptic corner of this episode tonight, we're going to go all the way down under to Australia and learn all about the Bunyip. And tonight's guest, a special guest, actually ghost-boxed Gettysburg and lived to tell about it. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friend, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Welcome to the episode 91 of your monthly paranormal variety show. And having you here is better than a new season of your favorite show coming out on Netflix just in time for quarantine, or just maybe finally getting that silly Facebook app to finally work and Messenger, and you can actually like got four or five people together and you're all not echoing and it doesn't suck. Why is it so great to have you here? Because you're wonderful, a masterpiece. Beautifully made, important to people because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator, whether that's God or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem. You, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, your family, and we are one. Episode 91, which May 2020. Have you tried unplugging this year in and plugging it back in again? My God. It's about the right time for me to check in with all you guys. I hope you're doing well. To anybody out there who may be affected by COVID-19, who's lost loved ones, jobs, or just even a sense of normalcy, I hope that my voice is a little bit of familiarity in a dark, dark time. It doesn't mean we can't have a lot of fun here. So please, just unplug your troubles. Let the negativity kind of roll off the back and let the paranormal and odd stuff roll in. Because this world is getting stranger and stranger by the freaking minute. I can comment on a lot of things that happened this month. Just the most bizarre stuff. But, you know, some of the highlights for me, just the weirdness. would probably have to be Donald Trump telling everyone to, like, clean out their lungs with bleach or what? Oh, my God, boy. Like, how is this guy the president of the United States? Like, you can't write this stuff he just comes up with, right? Oh, man. Can I tell you something, though, about your self-isolation? Do you know what? All seeds get planted and they're hidden from everyone. They're underground. You can't see what they're doing. About all the time they're under there, they're just kind of... they're kind of growing. They're sprouting. They're getting new things going on. They're changing so that when time comes through to bust through that soil, when the time comes to bust through, they're ready to go, man. They're planted in darkness like we are right now, but they're going to grow and they're going to sprout. They're going to be great things. Beautiful flowers, giant trees. You know, four marijuana plants. Look, I get through isolation my way. You get through yours way. I got some bittersweet news, though, of course. Look, anybody who's a long-time listener to this podcast knows I'm a foster parent. And once again, I know it seems like only yesterday that my new little foster baby got here, but he's actually going home on the 1st of May. So I'm actually releasing this episode. I'm recording this a couple of days before because I know I'm going to be too emotional to record. I actually, you know, I never ever said this to you guys before, but if I'm really upset, I can't record. It just comes out. I'm a very emotional person. So if I'm in a bad mood, it comes through on this. If I'm in a sad mood, it comes through on this. And if I'm just like crying through everything, can you imagine? Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John. It'd be terrible. Nobody wants to hear that. But hey, bittersweet, right? I got to say goodbye to my little foster guy, but another family is back together. So there you go. I'm going to enjoy my month off. I get a month off. You know, I actually work myself out of a job, and then I get a month off. So it's pretty cool. I can't think of a better time to be off, actually, getting all kinds of weird stuff thrown around the house. And anyway, not that being a full-time parent to my other two kids isn't sucking up most of my time, but, you know, I digress. It's not all bad news this month either. We actually managed to hook a brand new sponsor, which is Accusonus. I can't say enough good things about these guys. I'm actually going to promote them a little tiny bit now before the guest comes on later in the show. But these guys are excellent. These guys are excellent. And I actually got in contact with them, and I wanted them as my sponsor. So I actually reached out to them and told them, listen, man, I love your software. It's going to make my show sound way better. Hopefully this show sounds great because of what they're doing. It cuts down on my time. So it means more content. It means I can put out an extra episode every couple of weeks. You know what I mean? And that's been happening more often than not already. But this just makes that process better. So big thank you to Accusonus for doing that. You guys can check out their stuff down in the show notes. And much like other stuff we've had, like Blip Billboards was another sponsor we had. Much like them, it's important that, you know, listeners of the show, give them a click, go down and check it out. And you never know what kind of deal you might strike up, right? Now, I know that there's a lot of people out there right now who may be having a sense of isolation, not really seeing people they know. It's kind of stressful. And what can I say? I kind of feel it too. I'm missing a lot of my friends and family in particular. But there's one thing I can do here on this show, and it's something I haven't done. Like, my show has been around now for almost five freaking years. Actually, no. Isn't it six? I can't even remember. Is it 5 or 6 years? I've been doing this way too long. When you lose track of the years, way too long. But in June, actually. So that's coming up. But one thing I've never done is shout out people who subscribe to my show. And I thought about it, and I've been like, you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll start shouting out, you know, recent subscribers. And, just give them a little shout out here and let them know that I appreciate them. Obviously, if you're subscribing to the show and you don't leave a name, I can't shout you out. So just put it out there to you. And what I think I'm going to do is that I'll shout out a couple of names each show who subscribe to the show. And these people will unlock the horrible para joke of the day, which is something I used to do on Twitter back in the day, but I kind of miss doing it. It makes us feel a little bit more connected, so I think I'm going to do that. So here we go. A big thank you to Betty. A big thank you to Michelle. A big thank you to Martha Lever. A big thank you to Foggy. A big thank you to Carval. Scott Steinman. Maverick 2033. Angel. And Greg. And last but certainly not least, a girl named Sarah. Thank you so very much for subscribing to my show. You guys have unlocked the horrible parent joke of the day. So here it is. Albert Einstein was a genius, but his brother Frank was a monster. There you go. Horrible. Terrible. And on that note, I think it's time for us to dig in with some paranormal news.
Somewhere between the funnies and the obituaries is... Oh, yes. The paranormal news.
Then one time, I believe it was July.
August.
There's a knock on the door. I open it, and there's this cute little Girl Scout.
Oh, she was so adorable with the little pigtails now.
And she says to me, how would you like to buy some cookies? And I said, well, what kind do you have? She had Thin Mints, Graham Crunchy Thins.
Raisin Oatmeal.
Raisin Oatmeal. And I said, we'll take a Graham Crunch. How much would that be? And she looks at me and she says, I need about 350.
350?
Well, it was about that time that I noticed this Girl Scout was about 8 stories tall and was a crustacean from the Pleiadic era.
The Loch Ness Monster.
I said, damn it, monster, get off my lawn. I ain't giving you no 350. It said, how about just 250? I said, oh, now it's only 250. What is that, a sale on Loch Ness Munchies or something?
No, he was angry.
Tom Rado was angry.
what a classic, right? But, you know, you got to hand it to the Loch Ness Monster coming to the door selling cookies, you know, in this COVID recession, so to speak. You know, he's really taking his chances. He really was. Okay, I'm not here to play stuff from South Park, but the reason why I did this is because I actually have two stories to start the Paranormal News this month about Nessie. And there's actually a brand new video. The official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register has reported it's its second Nessie sighting of the year. There might not be any visitors to Scotland's iconic loch these days due to the coronavirus lockdown, but that hasn't stopped fans from checking the region's official webcam for signs of the monster. Mr. Fadohan was his name, and he's been checking the live feed just after 8 a.m. on April 13th, and bada boom, bada bing, there he was. He's seen a very large object. The object, which appears white in color, shows up at the start of the footage just above the large tree, the center of the right frame, and you guys can check out that video. All you gotta do is look it up online. Seeing a Loch Ness Monster, it's 120959. So this is like a lot. There's a lot of stuff going on there, but I actually watched the video and it's pretty wild. It's worth noting the boat traffic in the loch is likely to be practically non-existent at the moment as well. So like really, this is the perfect time to like see Nessie in the Loch Ness because, you know, you haven't got as much interference from like, I don't know, random people swimming there. Can people swim in Loch Ness? Are you allowed? I don't even know. You're not going to see, like, boats and people in canoes and stuff like that. So it's probably the best time, really, to see if it's there, right? The guy who saw it explained that it took a few seconds for the object appeared to show and that there was nothing on the surface of the water beforehand. It just kind of submerged and then came back up again. So could this be the fabled monster of the loch? And, you know... like I said, I actually got two stories. So this is the one thing. We got the video on one hand, but now we got somebody who's claiming that maybe there's actually some explanation behind this. Could some reports of Scotland's most famous lake monster be the result of actual seismic activity in the area over the years? There have been dozens of reported sightings of the creature. However, despite extensive research, no conclusive evidence has ever really existed. Besides some, you know, blurry stuff, and much like the video we got there, inconclusive stuff, right? So, what could be causing the disturbances in the water if it's not a large creature? And here's an explanation. Such earthquakes are common sometimes in these areas. According to Bacardi, a man who researched this, sightings of disturbances in the water could be attributed to seismic activity in the loch, which, as it happens, is situated right on top of the Great Glen Fault. So this would explain why no one really knows what's going on, you know? Earthquakes can produce bubbles that rise to the surface or cause underwater debris to come up loose and float up, giving the appearance that something large has emerged from the depths. Critics of this idea, however, have pointed out that the region rarely sees any earthquakes, and when they do happen, they're typically very minor, not even enough to produce a visible effect. There is also no record of earthquakes coinciding with any of the well-known sightings of the monster, so, you know, a possible explanation, another video. Once again, Nessie is still alive and well, or is she, in the loch? All I can say is that, you know, Nessie's probably one of the greatest examples of self-isolation you're ever going to see. Never been around anybody. Always more than 6 feet away, you know, not eating anyone. What a great monster. Oh, it was almost so much fun on the water, hey? But did you ever hear about shipwrecks and mystery shipwrecks and strange boats resurfacing and stuff like that? Like, this stuff happens. But not very often do we find a whole fleet of shipwrecks. And this actually happened this month in the Mediterranean. British archaeologists have discovered a treasure trove of shipwrecks, the oldest dating back to, you got it, 2,000 years. The vessels, which are situated approximately 1.5 miles beneath the Lebanon Sea, between Cyprus and Lebanon, have been described as embarrassment of wonders. The find represents the discovery of previously unknown maritime silk and spice route linking China and the east to Persia, the Red Sea, and the Mediterranean. Doesn't get better than this, said archaeologist Sean Kingsley. The shipwrecks themselves, which date back to the 19th century and the 3rd century BC, include vessels from the Greek, Roman, and even the Ottoman empires. One ship, a 17th century Ottoman merchant ship, is absolutely enormous and could have easily carried two normal-sized ships on its top deck. 43 meters long and a 1,000-ton burden is not one of the most spectacular examples of maritime technology and trade in any ocean. Its size is matched by the breadth of its cargo, said Kingsley. And what a cargo there might be down there. We're going to keep this in news. We're literally finding buried treasure, guys, in the Mediterranean right now with so many. 12, in fact, sunken vessels deep under the eastern Mediterranean. This is wild. This is exciting. This is very, very strange, though. Like... Have you guys seen, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow, you know? Like, have you guys seen Pirates of the Caribbean? Do you really want to screw with these ghosts? Really? Just wondering. And hey, since everything's sinking anyways, why not make a new boat? Okay, I'm going to be honest. Anybody who grew up in the 60s, 70s, I probably have to run in with magic mushrooms. But you know, other than making Super Mario super tall and people high as hell, there's actually some proof now and some viable construction that's been done with fungus. Yeah, that's a really weird thing. See, fungus is like the ideal building material if we can learn to harvest it because it grows so quick and basically grows on nothing. Well, plastic pollution is taking center stage in recent years. Scientists have been hunting for new types of biodegradable materials that can help shape the world in decades to come. One of the most promising possibilities is fungus, or more specifically, mycelium, the dense, fibrous roots of mushroom that are typically hidden beneath the soil. So why does this all got to do with anything at all, John? Come on, get to the point here. Well, what if I told you they made a boat? In addition to being biodegradable, fungus is waterproof and buoyant, perfect for building boats. The unorthodox vessel, which has been made, measures 8 feet long. It took a mere 2 weeks. 2 weeks to grow. So that's just a piece of art. This is a functioning boat that works, said Graham Hancock. And it really helps bridge the gap between people who didn't have an interest in mushrooms. Maybe they don't like to eat mushrooms or really haven't thought about other potential uses for them. The boat gave them something to look and to think about. And it looks real strange. You guys can look this up on Google. Mushrooms are here to help us. They're a gift, college student Katie Iris said. They're our biggest ally for helping the environment. And she's actually paddling one of these bizarre-looking boats. She is in the middle of a mushroom, man. This is crazy. So I'm pretty excited about that. You know, I wonder if you took a bite of this boat, would you actually, like, grow in size? it's a Nintendo joke. It's a Nintendo joke. Fine, I'll wash out the taste of a bad Nintendo joke with, well, Harry Potter.
Draco Malfoy.
Slytherin!
Slytherin! Oh, Draco. What if I told you there's a new classmate joining this particular house at Hogwarts? A new Snake is the real-life Salazar Slytherin. A new species of green pit viper has been discovered during an expedition to the remote regions in India. The impressive serpent, which is bright green body with a distinctive red stripe along its side, was spotted by researchers just recently. This particular region is deemed to be a biodiversity hotspot, where there's a lot of different animals that are evolving. So, what did the super cool scientists do? Just listen what they decided to name it. The new snake, which is part of the genus, Tremurzerus, has been named Trismegistus, get this, Salazar, after Salazar Slytherin, co-founder of the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. My goodness, as well as head of the House of Slytherin and author J.K. Rowling's phenomenally popular Harry Potter book series. Yeah, Harry Potter is a pretty paranormal, book series and movie series, really. In more casual conversation, it can also be referred to as Salazar's Pit Viper, which I think sounds so badass. It's a Salazar's Pit Viper. Sounds so much better than, it's a common grass snake. It's not the first few species to be named after Harry Potter characters either. There's also a spider known as the Gryffindori and a crab named Aseverus. So there you go. Popular culture, baby. Popular culture. Werewolves in Mexico. I seen a Mexican werewolf the other day. He was watching Lucha Libre. Residents of Coita in Mexico and Mexican state of Chiapas have been reporting sightings of a large wolf-like creature. Stories of the so-called werewolf, which has been described as being 2 meters tall and highly agile, have been circulating in the local press as well as on social media, where several people have posted stories and even photographs reportedly showing, get this, footprints and claw marks. So they actually have some data. According to reports, the mysterious beast has been heard walking across rooftops. and some residents even fallen out over whether it should be protected or eliminated. You also see reports of gunshots at night prompting a local police investigation. One pastor has asked residents to place candles outside their homes to help calm things down. For the second night, they do not sleep. This time, the media and reporters report shooting in the air from homes and people who hear loud walking, wailing, and howling on their roofs. Ooh, said Twitter user Saul Zentinino. Well, guys, I'm going to be honest with you. You have two options. Number one, you capture this thing, you teach them Lucha Libre, and you make them the newest, coolest wrestler you've ever seen. Number two, you throw them a doggy treat and hope for the best. Okay? Okay. On to another cryptid, I suppose. The unidentified man. Have you heard about this? He was missing for 12 hours and was finally rescued off the remote island Jamaica Bay. But what was really, really wild about this is when people were seeing this video of this man, they actually seen it come up on Twitter. And an example of social media running wild, so to speak, people thought this was a freaking Bigfoot sighting. They actually thought it looked like Bigfoot. Man, the unidentified man was reported missing for more than 12 hours before he was finally discovered on Rhode Island in Jamaica Bay, Queens. And, like, he was pretty much ready to do the whole Castaway thing from Tom Hanks' movie, man. He had, like, a big help sign made on the beach and everything. But, wow. Just pretty unreal. In addition, he made sure to get attention. The man was flying a police helicopter by frantically waving his arms when it flew by. I don't know how anybody could, like, mistake this for Bigfoot. But, like, we're talking thousands of comments here on this. Like, let me just read some of these to you. You found Bigfoot. I thought that was Bigfoot. Is that Bigfoot? So there you go. People are nuts. People are actually crazy. Oh, my goodness. How about some more good news? Look, this whole coronavirus thing got everybody bummed out. But, you know, nature has certainly been bouncing back in a lot of weird and wonderful ways. And, you know, I just got to say this. You know, Florida has just been... Look, well, I mean, what do you expect? It's where the Florida man lives, right? Florida man does this, does that. But anyway, Florida has just been, you know, not giving too many cares about this. And I feel so bad because there's a lot of people there who are self-isolating. But, you know, I think of all the spring breakers there a little while ago, and I'm just like, oh, my God, I hope you're all okay. But there's actually a really noticeable, impressive thing that's happened since, well, the spring breakers went home. You know, probably been like, what, a week or so now, maybe more, since they've gone. And now we're actually starting to see shells, like large paws of shells. Like we're talking, you could barely see any sand on these beaches. Like this is wild. This is just nature is just reclaiming it. It really goes to show you like how much an effect we have because those shells, it's not like they're just walking to the sand or something. They're actually all just picked up and taken. People take the shells as souvenirs in Florida. You know, it's a very common thing. They're used in crafts and art and all kinds of stuff. So it's pretty wild. If you just look up Florida beaches and all you can see is like the water and then the shells. It looks like rocks. Then you're like, well, wait a second. These are all like parts of sea snails and stuff. It's pretty wild. It's definitely a strange sight and definitely an odd one. Guys, we had a new Loch Ness Monster sighting and a potential explanation for what Loch Ness might actually be. And if you want me to repeat it, it only costs you about $3.50. Yeah, I'll move on. Okay. We actually found a whole fleet, 12 sunken ships in the Mediterranean. And it's kind of just wild to see what's going on over there. We had a boat made of mushroom. Interesting stuff. A snake named after a Harry Potter house. The Lucha Libre Werewolf of Mexico. Twitter's people being terrible and thinking some guy who got rescued is actually Bigfoot. And seashells by the seashore. All these stories have been on to Newfoundland.
C is for your claws so sharp to me. R is for reports we seldom see. Why do we ignore creatures of myth and lore? P is even more puzzling monsters we adore. T is for tales passed through the years. I is for icons of all our fears. D is for discovery of strange creatures in every country. It's the cryptid corner north to Newfoundland. Yeah.
According to Aboriginal Dream of Creation, deep in the heart of the Australian outback, there lurks a mysterious creature known as the Bunyip. This beast is said to inhabit and defend lakes, swamps, and billabongs, leaving its territory at night to venture into human dwellings to prey upon vulnerable women and children. Stories abound of its spine-chilling bellowing as it moves in search of its prey in and around the Australian waterways, but is this creature purely a fictional, symbolic warning about the very real dangers presented by the alligators that lurk in the inland waters of this vast continent? Or is there some truth behind the tales of the Bunyip? Among the Aborigines, there are varied descriptions of the Bunyip. Some say it's covered in feathers. Others say that it has scales like an alligator. Most all describe the animal as having an equine tail, flippers, and walrus-like tusks. These reports run counter, however, to the stories of the Bunyip related to the first Western settlers. Far from being a savage creature, these people describe the Bunyip as a kind of aquatic herbivore that lived in the waterways and peacefully grazed on the abundant grasses of the riverbanks and marshlands. Numerous written and spoken accounts of encounters with dog-faced bunyips during the 19th and early 20th centuries. The creature was sighted in lakes, rivers, and billabongs all over Australia and Tasmania as well. By contrast, reports of the rarer long-necked bunyip seem to be restricted to the state of New South Wales. Of the various theories in existence about the creature's origin, one in particular seems to have excited researchers, although many remain skeptical. Bunyip bears a strong resemblance both in its appearance and behavior to a supposedly extinct creature known as the Diprotodon, a large rhinoceros-sized herbivore's marsupial that roamed the land more than 10,000 years ago. Some experts believe that the Diprotodon was, like the Bunyip, equally at home on the land and in the water. Perhaps then, in a land rich in marsupial diversity, the Diprotodon evolved over the course of thousands of years into a sort of marsupial hoopio. Into a sort of marsupial hippo, the Bunyip. Although there are those who maintain that this might be possible, in general, scientists have dismissed the notion that a few of these ancient animals may have somehow survived until the 20th century. The last theory is that the Bunyip was, in fact, a seal, and that the mystery is a simple case of repeated misidentification, but the world may never know. So next time you're in Australia, be sure to check out, look up, look down low, and see if you can find one of these amazing creatures, one of these Bunyips.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
Before we hear from tonight's amazing guest, I need you guys to hear about a brand new sponsor that I personally went out and grabbed for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. That's how much I love these guys, because you know what? Look, I'm not the best podcaster in the world, and I'm definitely not the best editor, but these guys made me a pro. The company's name is Accusonus, and I'm talking about their Era 4 bundle, a collection of single-knob audio cleaning plugins that are incredibly fast and easy to use. They get great results with minimal effort, and even if you've never edited audio before, with the Era bundle, you don't have to be a pro to sound like one. To give you an example, I just want to talk from my heart here about these guys because I love them so much. They have this thing called a de-verberator. Okay, so as you can probably hear, my voice sounds different than in previous episodes. And that's because I actually moved my podcasting studio to a bigger room in my house. And it's great, you know, I got more room to stretch out and quiver with terror as I talk about weird stuff. But unfortunately, this makes my voice, well, kind of echo off the walls of flat surfaces in here. It's just a natural part of the noise. These guys have a thing called a deverberator. With a simple turn of a knob, this thing actually gets rid of my echo. I sound like I'm in a studio. I sound like I'm in a freaking radio station somewhere in a soundproof room with foam on the walls. I sound amazing. And you can sound amazing too. Guys, check them out at accusonus.com. That's accusonus.com. They've got a great deal on their bundle right now. About $500 worth of software for $150. Go check them out. And on with tonight's guest. Welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. The whole premise of this podcast is about discovering things that are about, you know, stuff that's out of the ordinary. I've recently found a service that helps businesses stand out from the crowd. That's right, I'm talking about tonight's sponsor, Blip Billboards. They help businesses of any size with any budget get seen on large format digital billboards. For me, seeing my podcast on a big billboard to get the word out was a dream come true. I never thought I could afford advertising on billboards, not in a million years, but thanks to Blip and their pay what you want approach, guess what? This dream became a reality that truthfully didn't cost a whole lot. It didn't take too much of my time. All you do is pick the billboards you'd like to advertise on, set your own daily budget and schedule, and bada bing, bada boom, upload your ad design. Once your ad is approved, your ad will be live for everyone to see. That's right. You're a few clicks away from getting your own advertisement on billboards in your local area or even all across the country. Blip Billboards is great for standing out locally or boosting awareness nationally. So whether you're a small tech startup, a local restaurant, or anywhere in between, your business can now afford to make these big impressions in the locations that matter most to you. What would your Blip Billboard say? Try Blip Billboards today. Hey, just for being a listener to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, I got something just for you. Go to my special URL to sign up for a free account, and you'll get a $25 Blip credit to help you get started at blipbillboards.com/odd. Just follow the special link down the show notes of the show, and you'll be on your way to having your very own Blip Billboard. Speaking of billboards and advertisements, for many years, people have investigated Gettysburg. And let's be honest, it just might be the ghost capital of the world, which makes, you know, kind of complete sense in a way. Because after years of experiences that he could not explain, tonight's guest decided to search for answers by himself. An award-winning newspaper editor and columnist, his view of the paranormal was drastically changed when experiences with his grandson in Gettysburg back in 2015 finally convinced him to take a serious look at the paranormal. An avid user of spirit boxes and dowsing rods, tonight's guest is Don Allison, and he's going to tell us all about how he met a ghost at Gettysburg. Hope everything's well on your end. Hope everything's going okay. As you know, we get into these conversations with many people on my show, and it's so nice to have somebody who I just feel like I can relate to right away, because the skeptical eye and the skeptical ear is not easily convinced. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it. What the heck happened back in 2015?
It was pretty crazy. And it actually, being a journalist, I just never thought anything paranormal had any validity to it at all. I just thought it was a case of active imaginations. But I took my grandson to Gettysburg for the history of it, not for the paranormal, but to keep him entertained. He was 14 at the time, and I got a chance to take him on a paranormal investigation, a public thing, but as a journalist, we got a private showing, so to speak. And we were there. We had different equipment, laser grid. We had K2 meters. An interesting piece was a little SB7 ghost box. We spent 2 hours there and got virtually nothing. We were at Saks Bridge in Gettysburg, and it was very crowded, and I was totally disappointed. We were just about done, but at this point, everybody else had left, and we started getting answers on the spirit box. You know, things like, is anyone with us? Yes. How many of you are with us? 7, 8, 9. What year is this? 1863. Just really got our attention. And my initial reaction is, okay, how are they hoaxing us? How are they able to pull this off? I didn't think it was real. We then eventually started getting someone to come through who told us he was a captain from Ohio. And he even gave us a name. We had trouble understanding the name. The young lady who was our lead kept asking, can you enunciate more clearly? And it was clearly three syllables, like the on, there's kind of an S at the end. And finally, we just gave up. But we got, I say, very interesting answers. When we asked where he was from, we couldn't understand it very well, so I started rattling off states. So when I got to Ohio, he said yes, very clearly. And I said, well, my grandson and I are from Ohio. All three of us there had a K2 meter. My grandson's meter and my meter went up to the highest level and stayed there several seconds. The young lady with us, hers did not budge, which I found rather interesting. And, this went on, and I'm just trying to think what some of the answers were. Were you hurt was the one that really, really affected me, because we got a blood-curdling male scream, like total anguish. It still sends chills down my spine to think about it. And then there was a woman crying. And that was the end of the investigation. Before we talked to the captain also, I found it interesting, we got music to come through. And I know a ghost box, the SB7 scans, radio stations. So to get a blip of music's not unusual, but we were getting measures, lengthy measures of period guitar music. It sounded like a mandolin. After a while, it stopped. I said, wow, you're good. And the voice says, thank you.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Can you play some more?
You're like, we're all going to be on lockdown soon. You can come have a jam at my house. You know, this COVID-19 thing. And what an interesting concept. Now, for anybody out there who's listening to my show right now who's not familiar with what a PSB-7 is, what he's actually talking about is the ITC research device, the PSB-7, something I'm very familiar with myself, actually, that I've used many, many times. And, a lot of people are skeptical of it, but I am one of those people out there who are a diehard believer in that piece of equipment, because it's one thing to get those little radio blips, but when you get things that are, well, I call them made communications in my book, multiple word, audible to the ear, intelligently communicated, and in direct response to you or a stimuli, then you know you're getting something great. This guy just told you that he's got music, period music from the Civil War on this spirit box.
And then it says yes. So there you go. I mean, that is not just your class A AVP of something you hear, EVP you hear somewhere. This thing is the real deal. So tell me, Tony, a little bit more about your experiences with the Ghost Box, because I love that piece of equipment personally.
Yeah, that was my first experience with it, and to date has been my best. I have gotten some pretty interesting answers, and with other devices, the Phasma Box, if you're familiar with that, you know, loaded onto a laptop. I was investigating in Gettysburg last fall, and we were at the site of a Civil War field hospital. Actually, the property is owned by friends of mine, but we were getting a conversation in German. And we couldn't really tell if it was just there or if they were responding to us. None of us understood the language. And after a while, we moved to set up a different place. And I was alone working, setting up some of the equipment. The other folks are back where we'd been investigating. And clear as could be, a voice comes over, a male voice, "Are you Dutch?" And I kind of chuckled and I said, "No, I'm not Dutch." I said, "I do have German ancestry, but I am not Dutch." And just on a whim, I said, "Sprechen Sie Deutsch?" And a woman who had been in on the conversations earlier said this, "Nein," and the man starts laughing. And I just cracked up laughing. Like, this was incredible. Yeah, this was great.
It's interesting, too. You know, Gettysburg, I mean, come on, thousands of people dead. That's the first thing that pops in my mind. If there was ever going to be a place that's haunted, okay, it's got to be Gettysburg. Bunch of people who died just terrible deaths. Like, we're not talking like a nuclear bomb wiping out a bunch of people and it's a quick, painless death, really. We're talking like people who died slowly of gunshot wounds. Like, this is musket fire we're talking here. You know, I think of the things that might stimulate a haunting, Don, and the first thing that pops in my head are traumatic events. So, like, I can't think of much more traumatic than Gettysburg. Now, to know that there's spirits, though, still having a good time on the other side there, kind of lightens my heart a little bit, to be honest. Tell me a little tiny bit about this captain. Did you hear much more out of him, or was it just a one-time thing?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When I got home, my initial response, this is my first paranormal investigation, period. And I was convinced as a journalist that they were trying to pull one over on me. So I started researching what the SB7 was and so forth. But I was curious, okay, could this person be real? Were there any Ohio captains killed or mortally wounded at Gettysburg? I found out, yes, there were seven of them, to be exact. One of them, his name was Malin Briggs.
Ooh, wait now. That sounds kind of like what you were saying, but in reverse.
Well, actually, it matched perfectly with what we heard.
Cool.
And it's like he wanted us to have his name. The interesting thing was he was wounded on day one of the fight, captured by the Confederates. He probably died at Saxe Bridge. Many of their worst wounded, especially officers, POWs, would have been taken to Saxe Bridge. This area was one vast open field hospital. Since then, I have been to Gettysburg. I have gotten some responses with an SB7 from that same spot, but I have had really good luck with dowsing rods, getting him to answer questions.
But the really fun part about all this is that these experiences actually encourage Don to do something not many people get a chance to do in their lives, and that's not just write a book, but publish one. I met a ghost at Gettysburg, a journalist's journey into the paranormal. Congratulations, by the way. I think it's fantastic that you've been able to document this and put your own just professional touch on this, because as a journalist, you're all about asking those hard questions and really knowing the analytical side of these things. Must have been really hard on you mentally, though, doing all this, because, you know, it was hard on me because I was such a staunch atheist when I started ghost hunting. It was like, wait a second, there's something to all this. Like, it was, you know, pretty life-altering. How did you kind of reconcile both of those parts of your brain, so to speak?
I've always been a very spiritual person. I was raised attending church. My grandfather was a Southern Baptist minister. I live in Ohio, but I would frequently visit. He died when I was young, but I'm much more spiritual than I am religious. And so I've not really been surprised that there's something there, but I've been surprised that we're able to actually communicate and make contact. And it took several years. Our house is very active too. And that were my first experiences were in my house. The Gettysburg experiences came by accident from my work in history. So yeah, it's my wife and my coworkers at the newspaper urged me to write a book. I resisted for a long time. And when I was driving home with the first batch of books from the printer, what's going through my mind is, have I lost my mind? I could just picture people just laughing with derision at me as I'm trying to promote and speak about this book. I have been shocked at the positive reception I've gotten.
You know, I was shocked myself. You know, I'll be honest with you, it's a pretty lonely thing to pursue no matter how many friends you got in the field, because everyone has a different point of view and everybody has different objectives, you know? So when I published my book, it was kind of, I had that feeling too. It was like, man, are people going to make fun of me? Like, are people going to laugh me out of these buildings? And the next thing you know, you're getting invited to like cons and stuff. Tell me about some of the cons you spoke at. You know, I actually looked in your bio that you've done some public speaking on the subject as well.
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. I was one of the speakers at the Gettysburg Battlefield Bash last year. I've done the Old Mill Parrot Fest at Dundee. That is a pretty big deal here in the Midwest. I've done a number of Paracons in Toledo, the Columbus area. Almost always I've been invited to speak. I have not just set up as a vendor at very many, and I feel very blessed, really, that I've been accepted as well as I have, and I've received the speaking, you know, invitations that I do get.
And this is another reason why I do this podcast, because I get to talk to people who are like-minded and open-minded enough that this stuff might actually exist. What are some of the most compelling, I don't want to say evidence, I'm not allowed to say that, what's the most compelling data Don Allison has actually come across?
Or anecdotal, yeah. It's rather, the one that I mentioned, of course, with the Phasma box at Gettysburg, the basement of the house, of the property where that took place, is very interesting. I was not there for this, but I have a copy of the photo. It was taken during the world's largest ghost hunt in 2018. September of 2018, very controlled conditions, and the basement was a Confederate field hospital during Gettysburg, and there is a very clear image of a Confederate officer standing behind one of the investigators. You can see his hat, his sword. You can tell the type of hat he's wearing, the coat. He's got facial hair. It's an amazing photograph. Just incredible photograph.
Don, I've got to have this photograph so I can use it for the podcast there when I put this up for you, okay? Wait a second. Okay. Is that so happen to be what's on the front of your book?
No, what's on the front of the first book is actually a photo of Malin Briggs, the captain we were discussing earlier. In my research, I found his photograph.
What an amazing cover. I love that. And it's actually a really beautiful picture with that picture superimposed over it. So bless your heart for giving me a really cool podcast cover anyway. Tell me a little tiny bit of what the future holds for Don. You know, you're speaking at all these things. You're doing a lot more paranormal investigation. Have you thought about maybe, well, I don't know, investigating other places?
Yeah, I do a fair amount of investigating, mainly at Gettysburg, but actually, we have a place just a handful of miles from my house, was featured on the Travel Channel, Most Terrifying Places, and I've investigated there. Pretty phenomenal, really. I've never investigated there without getting some data, I guess, in place of the word evidence. But I got to be interviewed as a historian for the site and also talking about my paranormal experiences there.
I think it's really cool, too, that you've got this military thing, because it's just, it's kind of bizarre because, you know, my first ghost hunt, well, they were it was in an abandoned military barracks. In fact, Cape Spear, Newfoundland's most easterly point in North America. And, yeah, that battery, those guns, I went down there, and I went down there 17 times to investigate this place. So I totally dig that. Tell me a little tiny bit more about this grandson of yours. So you mentioned him a couple times in some of the other comms and things like that. You know, is he still doing the ghost hunting thing with you?
He is more interested, but he's been very involved. He just graduated high school last spring. He's now working. He is looking to start his college studies. So he's not really been able to. He's not been back to Gettysburg since then, but he's very interested in what I do.
You know, if my dad was a healthy man, we'd definitely go ghost hunting together. So I think it's wonderful. And, you know, hats off to you for involving the family, because it's really cool to have someone to go with. It's so much more fun anyway. So tell me a little tiny bit about what your theories are behind all these things. You know, I like to think that you probably got a pretty interesting take on what a lot of this stuff might be. So go ahead, lay it on me. What do you think we're actually hearing here?
Yeah, I believe that, for lack of a better description, that science is behind this, that this is our natural universe at work. We just don't understand it. There's some pretty interesting developments in quantum physics tie into a lot of this. The fact that our minds communicate with light is a fairly recent development out of the laboratory that I find fascinating. Particle entanglement, the fact that our minds can control light in controlled experiences, and not only control it, but actually do so retroactively, which to me is mind-blowing. The double-slit experiment is what that's all about. So I do think that we just don't understand it, but I think there's energies. I do believe that a part of what we are survives our body in the form of energy, and I cannot describe it any other way than that.
Of course, in our travels, unfortunately, we do come across the wet blankets. It's true. In fact, I used to be the wet blanket on many investigations, as people could have swore they heard their name when all I said is, no, you just heard the local radio station, and the disc jockey's name is also yours. What do you do about the skeptics? Because you know what? It took me many years to finally convince a lot of my skeptic friends that there's more to this than meets the eye. Here, check out some of my data. What do you do when you come across a skeptic, Don? Do you just move on with your life, or do you actually sit there and say, you know, wait now, before you dismiss it, give it a chance?
I do try to engage them. I don't argue, and there are some pretty narrow-minded people, and I think short of having them experience what you or I have experienced, you're not going to convince them. Quite frankly, that may have been me 5 years ago, so... And I've had one of my best friends was very skeptical, and he just could not see it until he had his own experiences here in my house. And now he's totally on board with it. Did a 360.
And boy, can those 360s be painful for some people, I tell you, and unnerving as well. But, you know, I think me and you are kind of agreeing on one thing. There's really nothing to fear with a lot of this stuff. I think it's more natural than paranormal. I think it's just a natural part of what's going on inside of, you know, these environments. You know, I talk to a lot of my, you know, guests about a recipe for a haunting. You know, what do you think it takes to have a haunted place? Now, me personally, I don't really believe in a haunted area, so to speak. I believe in areas that are more active than others. So I think we actually live in a haunted world, and, you know, with the right stimuli, this stuff comes out. But what's Don's take on that? What do you think makes Gettysburg, well, so haunted?
I think there is a combination of things. For one thing, the quartz and the rock, there are theories that helps with the energy, much like the quartz battery in a watch. I think the fact that there is a lot of energy from these, you know, untimely violent deaths, and I think the fact that people are there in search of the activity, I think also provides fuel for the activity. I've had some pretty just amazing personal experiences that I don't really often talk about because they're very anecdotal. They're things that happened to me. I had an experience on East Cemetery Hill that actually has led to a book that I'm now working on, hope to have out later this spring, where the 107th Ohio Regiment fought. And I actually, in my mind's eye, saw the battle and the confusion, and I had no clue what went on there until I got home and researched it. Very odd thing is I had some friends there. They'd never been to East Cemetery Hill, and I didn't tell them anything about what happened there. And we got to the site, and we were right pretty well where I had my experience. And one of the ladies with us started crying uncontrollably. She didn't know why.
So what do you think made her cry? Do you think she just kind of picked up on the emotion in the air?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just said it was very sad. And actually, I hope to be talking with her further about that in a week or so. Like I said, I'm working on the book now, and the book will include her take on just what happened. But she had tears running down her eyes and just was totally overcome.
You know, this isn't the only book you have on the back burner, I'm sure, in your mind. But, you know, besides the one you have out, you actually got another couple of books out, too. Mm-hmm. Hell on Belle Isle, Diary of a Civil War POW, and the best of On My Mind, the Bryan Times newspaper columns by Don Allison. Hell on Belle Island actually kind of blew my mind because, you know, I'm in Newfoundland and, you know, right next to us is Belle Island. but that's a different Belle Island. That's where the old mines used to be. That's where a lot of people know about it. Tell me a little bit about Hell on Belle Isle. I know it might not be completely related to what we're talking about, but why not give us a little synopsis of your other two books, Hell on Belle Isle and The Best of On My Mind.
Yeah, well, The Best of On My Mind, I've done a weekly newspaper column for decades. And this is some of my favorite columns. I'm currently just now publishing volume two of that. Hell on Belle Isle is my very first book. It is based on the letters and diaries of a POW who actually lived in my town, Bryan. At one point served on the Union Army, and he was a prisoner of war in Richmond, Virginia. And there's really no other books about that particular prison. It was absolutely horrible. And this details his experiences about maybe half the book are his letters and diaries, and the rest is my narration explaining what happened and, you know, setting the stage. And I also have a follow-up to my I Met a Ghost book. It's called I Met More Ghosts at Gettysburg.
Oh, my goodness. So this is a continuation. I didn't even realize. I apologize for that. Oh, but that's really interesting. Okay, so go ahead. Tell me more about this. This is part two.
Huh. Yeah, the part two book, and it's been out for just about a year now, maybe a little less than a year. But it... kind of a continuation more to the story. I've had further investigations and results in those investigations at Gettysburg. Actually, I kept having unusual occurrences at Little Round Top. I covered that in the first book when I was with my grandson. It turns out, when I got looking into it, I had ancestors who fought with the Confederates at Little Round Top in the Alabama Brigade. And the experiences I had were right where my ancestors fought.
Pretty interesting stuff. So I met a ghost at Gettysburg. I met more ghosts at Gettysburg. I mean, what are you going to call the third book?
The third paranormal book, I would be just about wrapping it up, but because of the travel restrictions and closures, I have to do some more research at Gettysburg at the National Park Archives, and they're closed. But that is, the working title of that is dispelling the ghosts of dishonor, the 107th Ohio at Gettysburg. And it's a little different. It is a combination street history and paranormal. My experience is what led me to write the book, and then a very serious look at this regiment at Gettysburg and at Chancellorsville.
I find that fascinating because now you're getting the real-time things you're actually capturing, you know, while you're out investigating and what other people are reporting, which coincide with things that actually happened there, such as the captain. You know, not only did you capture the captain, so to speak, but you also found him in history. So it's just, it's really, really interesting. And I love it when things kind of jive. So cool when that stuff happens.
And that's really my focus when I talk at Paracons, you know, different, you know, paranormal related events, is do your research, you know, collect your data, you know, collect your evidence, you know, do a good job with that side of it, but also research the history. So often there is a connection. If you look, you will find it.
Favorite piece of ghost hunting equipment? I gotta say ghost hunting, sorry. favorite piece of ghost hunting / paranormal investigating / non-local causality locating equipment? There you go. I covered all three bases.
It's going to be a tie for me. Any form of quality spirit box is tough to beat, and dowsing rods. I have found that I just have whatever it takes to use a dowsing rod with good results. Some of my most phenomenal evidence has come through dowsing rods.
I think that's really fascinating because the first thing I think about dowsing rods is somebody looking for water. So
they do for that, by the way.
Yes, so they have multiple purposes. So how would you use these dowsing rods? Tell me a little tiny bit about these because it's not something that I'm really too familiar with. I'm more of a smoke seeker, and I'm also a PSP 7 guy, and also, you know, put six recorders in a room and try to figure out where it's coming from kind of guy.
Yeah.
Tell me a little tiny bit about, you know, how you use those dowsing rods in real time, so to speak.
Well, I was never impressed with even the thought of them, but I saw a friend of mine use them and get some pretty phenomenal results. So I asked to borrow them, and I went to the same location. We were lucky. We were investigating a field hospital at Gettysburg over a weekend. So the next night, I used the dowsing rods and was able to get pretty much the same answers. And I'm very skeptical of these, but I've looked into the science behind them. I'm no less than Albert Einstein. Thought they were very effective, and basically your body is the antenna for the electromagnetic fields, much like a K2 meter, and you know, basically the limitation is you're getting yes-no answers, although they will point directions, and you can sense the intensity. My most incredible result with dowsing rods there, I can, if I am alone or with maybe one person who is in tune, I can have my dad with me, I can have my wife with me, I make contact with a 44th Alabama soldier at Sachs Bridge. He is married, had three kids, but what really got to me, and I've made contact with him multiple times, but I asked, are you glad that you had the chance to talk with me? Do you appreciate the chance to communicate with me? The rods not only crossed, they crossed so hard they bounced off my chest.
Wow.
And guys, I think you have to be careful. You have to be very still. It's difficult to manipulate them, but it can be done if you would like to fake it. But now I think very highly of dowsing rods.
Everybody's got to have their favorite toys, Don. Guys, I met a ghost at Gettysburg, a journalist's journey into the paranormal. I met more ghosts at Gettysburg, a journalist's journey into the paranormal, and many other books, too, you can find on Amazon.com. Check them out online. Don Allison, thank you so very much for being a part of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Love talking to you about Gettysburg and the equipment you use. You take care of yourself.
You too, John. Thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed it.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.